The Gary Knoll Show, daily at noon on the Progressive Radio Network.
Oh, a happy day.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Knoll Show. And now, your host, Gary Knoll.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll, and I'd like to welcome you to this program. Today, we're going to be talking about the latest in healing, the superfoods, ways of cleansing and detoxifying our body, and how to live a longer life, and new information about how you're going to live about 7 years shorter if you just make one mistake. And I'll talk about what that mistake is and how we can prevent it. Our commentary today for the people in the audience to be able to call in, and this is a part of a very popular part of our program, is where people have a chance to hear something that is reflective of everyone in the audience. In other words, it's very broad-based. And this is a commentary from Henry Giroux, American Democracy Beyond Casino Capitalism in the Torture State. Also, time permitting, I have an extended version of the show today. It'll be 3 hours. I'm going to talk about America's nuclear reality. In other words, we've been told our nuclear facilities in the United States, including the one that's just 22 miles north of New York City, is safe. No problem. Well, how do we know we can trust these individuals? I'll show you why we cannot trust them. Many of the very people telling us that they're safe work for the nuclear industry. We'll give you a report card on America's nuclear facilities. Also, the federal government has completed a confidential audit, and they found that the five biggest mortgage firms that were taking back people's homes defrauded taxpayers. We're talking about Bank America, J.P. Morgan Chase, Wells Fargo, Citigroup, and LA Financials. Why is it none of them have been brought to justice? That's what it means to have friends in powerful places. It's all political. You and I do a defrauding, we go to jail. They do it, and nothing happens. We'll be taking calls through much of the program. Now, at some point, many of you listening on terrestrial or land-based stations, New York and Washington, California, Florida, you'll be switching away to hear President Obama's comments about what's going on East-West relations. If you want to continue listening to the program, just go to progressiveradionetwork.com. That's progressiveradionetwork.com. Or if you forget that, GaryKnoll.com, and you'll be able to hear the show uninterrupted. The guest in the second part of the program will be Thomas Elpel, and he is a visionary philosopher. He is going to talk about a roadmap to reality, consciousness, worldviews, and the blossoming of the human spirit, and all the ways that we as individuals can change our perceptions and our perspectives at different stages of our lives, and to make life better. So you will enjoy that, I'm sure. So that's what we have up. Let's begin. Always with the latest from the science. This is from the peer-reviewed journal Atherosclerosis. It's a major study, and it shows that grape seed extract, resveratrol, and I know a lot of you are using resveratrol, and pomegranate, and I know many of you are using pomegranate every day. They're potent blood pressure-lowering agents, natural ways to lower blood pressure. We used to think the blood pressure was mainly for overweight people who are over the age of 50. Now children have high blood pressure because of their diet and lack of exercise. And the high amount of processed foods with a lot of sodium and salt forces your blood pressure up. In fact, we're looking at over 55 million Americans with high blood pressure that we know of. The bad thing is when you have uncontrolled blood pressure, it degrades the vascular system throughout the body. That would be like your all the veins and the arteries and the walls. It also destroys your kidneys, your eyes, and the delicate arteries around the heart and the brain. Now, small increases in blood pressure place you at a dramatic increased risk of a heart attack or a stroke, kidney failure, and blindness. So what is the good news here? Antioxidants. Not just any antioxidants, but the antioxidants in grapeseed, resveratrol, and pomegranate found in the regular consumption of these foods can effectively, quote, reduce blood pressure without the need for dangerous prescription drugs. You've heard me mention the natural, it happens every time you breathe in and exhale out, oxidative stress. When you breathe in, you're breathing oxygen into your lungs. That's good. But in that period of a millisecond when oxygen goes into your blood, goes into the cell, and allows the cell to create energy, you also create a free radical, lots of them. And that free radical is what damages the cell. Cells that are left damaged can end up becoming non-functional, dead, or diseased. The science behind this is very extensive. Most of my adult life I've spent in understanding biological sciences of aging. And I've been able to apply what I've learned in helping individuals, and then that's how I share the information on this show, for example, or in lectures. But I remember when I first began to talk about oxidative stress, people didn't know what that was. Oxidative, it means oxygen. Stress means the byproduct of oxygen in the body is that it creates free radicals, and that hurts you. And then you end up with this irony that when you run or bike or swim or jog or power walk or dance, you're creating oxidative stress. That means that where you're toning your muscles and improving your circulation, helping your brain and your kidneys better detoxifying, you're also prematurely aging the cells. The science is that you damage 10,000 times a day every cell in your body. Now do the math. You have anywhere from 60 to 100 trillion cells times 10,000. That's why we age prematurely. That's why people are under stress, age very fast. People are depressed, age fast. Stress and anxiety, uncertainty, insecurity. You take a look at a person 6 months or a year after going through chronic or acute stress, they look much older. Then look at oxidative stress from smoking, drinking. Every drink of alcohol you have constricts capillaries. It causes massive oxidative stress. Then fried foods, deep fried foods like French fries, that causes oxidative stress. Barbecued foods cause oxidative stress. Now, there are things that will not cause oxidative stress that we can eat and drink, and they're good for us. But if you take your supplements, if you take your antioxidants, if you take your high ORAC supplements, you are protecting against oxidative stress. And that's what this article is saying. Writing in the journal Metabolism, this is separate from the other ones, scientists compared the effects of grapeseed extract and resveratrol on subjects with metabolic syndrome, which is diabetes. And after 4 weeks of consuming 150 milligrams a day and up to 300 milligrams a day, and versus a placebo, which is just a sugar pill, there's a substantial drop in blood pressure and overall better health. Now, pomegranate juice also led to a substantial drop in blood pressure into the normal range. So if you want to protect your heart, want to prevent a stroke, resveratrol, grapeseed extract, and pomegranate. That's the latest from two separate scientific studies on a lot of people that showed it works. Now, some people have heard of comfrey, but very few people actually consume it. Comfrey, also known as knit bone, is often referred to as one of the more important herbs that we could use. Why? Because it has so many healing properties. It also has more than ample vitamins and minerals. In fact, most people who are in the field of nutritional and functional medicine know the comfrey is virtually identical to other green leafy vegetables which people consume on a daily basis. But it doesn't stop there. It can help you heal sprains, bruises, and dislocations. Comfrey has a full spectrum, germanium and special fibers, vitamin C and B complex. And it also has two things. One is called mucilage, and the other is called allantoin, A-L-L-A-N-T-O-I-N, which are responsible for anti-inflammation. So if you have arthritis, if you have cataracts, macular degeneration, if you have any inflammation in the brain like dementia, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, ALS, multiple sclerosis, if you have lower back pain, then comfrey, C-O-M-F-R-E-Y, is very good because it's a great anti-inflammatory. It also is an astringent. That means that you're going to get better blood flow. It is also called an expectorant that helps expel all that mucus from your throat. It is also an emollient that helps to soften the body tissues, including the skin. And that's why historically comfrey was used in most of your natural creams that went on the skin. It also is a mild sedative and assists with blood clotting and increases cell growth and heals injuries. So in many respects, you could say that this herb, also lowering your cholesterol level, helps prevent excessive spikes in glucose, would be a great choice for diabetics. It also is a natural laxative. And Native Americans use it as a natural poultice. They would place it over bruises and sprains and injuries, and it would help reduce swelling of the affected area. In fact, if you place a comfrey compress over, let's say, some scrapes and cuts, it acts as a disinfectant and a pain reliever. You can eat the leaves, and they can help with internal bleeding, diarrhea, and hemorrhaging. And it also helps with bleeding gums, and it's antifungal and antibacterial. It also helps with ulcers. It helps with burns because it benefits the healing of the burned area. So our herb of the day is comfrey. It has no downside effects. It's all good for you. Now, I mentioned that something earlier in the show could cause you to live 7 years shorter. You don't want that. It is less sleep. Women and men who begin sleeping more or less than 6 to 8 hours per night are likely to age up to 7 years. It's called sleep deprivation and sleeplessness. They're extremely dangerous because it'll affect your performance, response time, errors of commission, and attention and concentration. Furthermore, sleep duration has been found to be linked with a wide range of life quality measurements like social functioning, mental and physical health, early death. This is all in the peer-reviewed journal Sleep. Quote, "The main result to come out of our study was that adverse changes in sleep duration appear to be associated with poor concentration, cognitive function," and this is in University College of London School of Medicine. Now, here's part of the problem. This was done, by the way, on 5,000 people. I sleep very little, but my body is not toxic. I have the normal exposures when I'm out walking or on a plane or driving. Yes, but I'm compensating. Every day when I see what's ahead of me, I try to make an effort to compensate for anything I might be faced with that otherwise could be a problem. If you're not toxic physically, or if you're not stressed mentally, then the body does not require the same amount of sleep. But this is looking at the average person that is not healthy and is stressed. Now throw in there the use of cell phones. That will adversely affect your brain and the pineal gland, which secretes melatonin, which allows for quality sleep. Look at how close you are to any form of a hair blower, microwave oven, television, computer, a digital clock. All of these throw off electromagnetic pulses, which will cause sleep deprivation. Then think about eating late at night, sleep deprivation. Eating anything with glucose, sleep deprivation. Having music or television or light on in the room, sleep deprivation. And that's why so many people are having a problem. So we have to understand you pay a price. And one other thing, there's a separate study published in Science Daily that I read early this morning, and it's published in the Journal of Neuroscience. And this was done at Penn School of Arts and Sciences. And here's what it says. The roots of memory impairment resulting from sleep deprivation identified. From high school students to surgeons, anyone who has pulled an all-nighter knows there's a price to be paid the next day. Trouble focusing, a fuzzy memory, and cognitive impairments. Now researchers at Penn have found the part of the brain and the neurochemical basis for sleep deprivation's effects on memory. Then it goes in to discuss this. So once again, when you're pushing yourself to work beyond what you should, then you end up having some real serious health problems. I'm Gary Nall, back in a moment. Please stay with us.
If you see me walking down the street and I start to cry each time we meet, walk on.
Everyone, I'm Gary Nall. We're going to be doing a commentary here, and we're going to speak with Elizabeth in our studio in New York City. She is reading your email each day and selecting those issues that would impact the most number of people, and then I try to address them when she asks them. And then I ask you to call in and share your points of view. Our call-in number for you is 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. Write that down. Let's hear what she has to say, my answer to it, and then my commentary. Let's say hello to Elizabeth. Hi, Elizabeth.
Good afternoon, Gary. Thank you. Would it be possible for you to take a little time to address the following? Because there's no doubt there are people in this audience, especially this audience, who've pondered this issue at some point or another and or have been actively engaged in it. The issue is this. For so many here that will be aware, from the ancient Greek philosophers through to Christ, through to the teachings of the mystics, through the sensitives, including Edgar Cayce, to enlightened thinkers today, humanity has been taught and reminded again and again and again that there is a higher reality to the human existence, that the way to live, the way to find meaning and in our lives and the key to living in harmony together is to go inwards, to become acquainted with the life of the soul and to progress upwardly in our soul development by living a life of morality and good and ethics, choosing the selfless life to imitate the Christ, as Western thinkers have told us, over choices that would keep us attached to, distracted by the temporal material plane, for it is our nature to strive to become closer to this universal one or God in Christian thinking from which we all derive. But one need only have the least knowledge of history and to take a look at the world today, of course, to find the evidence is absolutely to the contrary. Mankind has been engaged in wars, exploitation, crisis, challenge, simply hell in comparison for as long as civilization has existed. So one can certainly understand the Darwinian point of view that the reality of human nature is nothing more than survival. We are merely evolved animals, but essentially as competitive as, and with all the same basic instincts as the rest of the animal kingdom. And somehow through trial and error, as we're striving to reach a point of security and stability so that we can, have our species move forward, any progress and any organization we've made is merely a byproduct of this. So for anyone who's seeking the truth of life through the illusions, what is the fiction and where's the reality if the first is true, that these great teachers are to be, you know, if we're to follow them, then why have we ignored their teachings? What's happened to us? Why have we fallen so far? The idea that we perhaps are lost souls, how could we have let it get so far? Or if the other thing is the case, then are we simply on a course whereby, as with other species throughout the age of our planet, that we're simply going to self-destruct like, you know, the dinosaurs? Would you be able to address this, which is, you know, a large issue, of course, I understand.
All right. This is the difference, in my opinion, between truth and certainty. You're familiar with Friedrich Nietzsche.
Yes.
He said there are no facts, only interpretations. That is religion, all religion. And Voltaire said, doubt is not a pleasant condition, but certainty is. So imagine how many people today rush into a belief, political, social, religious, cultural, because it gives them the certainty that what they're doing, where they're at, what they're feeling, what they're eating, drinking, breathing, is right. They don't need facts. They merely need that the interpretation of their life is correct as to how they're living it. It is when we wake up one day and take a look around us and see that so many of the things we believed in no longer are certain. I grew up at a time as a baby boomer where most people worked only one job their entire life. There was a certain social expectation of being responsible, not being shifty, not having a lot of wives or husbands, not moving all over the place, not breaking the social laws. And so when our society began to go through some gyrations and changes, it confused people. Those people who were not willing to examine, was there any reality in the changes of the 1960s, the kids going from the college campuses and protesting the war, then began to protest sexual inhibition. Hence the birth of both the sexual revolution within the heterosexual and gay community happened in the 1960s, about 1964 in one and 1967 in the other. Then from there, people came to an awareness that, why should I trust a government that has supported McCarthyism and Joe McCarthy, and supported a Cold War, a nihilistic philosophy, that has supported very limited views of democracy and freedom, where we interpret for the rest of the world what should be their form of freedom. In other words, everyone will live their freedom and democratic principles through our mandates, not through their own. No different than the missionaries, filled with a sense of contempt for anything that challenged their underlying foundational beliefs, that there is only one God and is their God. There's only one set of teachings, there's their teachings. So no matter how peaceful or no matter how happy natives were, they couldn't really be safe from their own immortal sins. They had to be reborn again, hence the concept that that you must infrequently enslave, abuse, torture, or kill a group of people until they completely submit to your truth. Then all is well. We have done this forever. All groups of people have done it, within themselves and without. It's how you maintain control. You do not have strong dissidents of equal power within any institution. You have one dominant power. Others who are of a dissenting nature almost always are dislocated from the base of power by calling them dissidents. Just the word, you're a dissident, shoves you out of the room of power making, so you no longer have a voice that would be considered reasonable and wise and instructive and illustrative of a truth. You're controversial, you're radical, you're a free thinker. Imagine a woman saying that she wants to have her own sex life in any way she wants with any consenting adult. In our society today, she would be pillared. except for a small contingent. But before they destroyed her, they'd want every salacious detail, because through their own perverse and prurient minds, they would have to distill, what has this woman seen, done, experienced, that I have not, bounded by my fears and the certainty that my fears and shame and guilt are righteous. But I can be righteous in my condemnation of another. They cannot be righteous at their condemnation of me. It is not that we will talk or dialogue as equals. In our society, there are no equals. Everything you see every day in the world is the positioning of power of one person to maintain dominance over another, a group over another, a corporation over another, buying corporations so you don't have to compete at a level playing field. The need for individuals or groups, even countries, to have dominance, which means that you must come from a dominant mindset, which means that equality, truth, are never on the table to be discussed. And anyone who disagrees will be purged. So then what you end up having is you don't have a true democracy. You do not have a true sense of idealism. You have an enormous amount of illusion disguised as righteous. So the righteous on Wall Street believe that as long as they're making $1 million an hour per individual, that is right because they are wiser than the people who are not smart enough to figure out how to game the system to their advantage. They will be rewarded. They will be looked upon as unique, almost godlike, because they could earn $2 to $4 billion in 1 year. That's more than the Rockefellers, the Swearingens, the Hills, the Goulds, the Mellons earn collectively in a year. So they have done what no one before them has ever done. And they have done it within the rules of engagement. But they created the rules of engagement, or those of a like mind. So who am I or anyone else to judge them? So instead of judging them, we only judge what they do with their money. They're wise enough to sprinkle some of that through philanthropic groups around so that people who otherwise would be critical have been silent. They will then form foundations and think tanks, the Heritage Foundation, the Free Enterprise Institute, the Cato Institute, and they will staff it with people who all think alike, even if they come from different backgrounds. And what are these groups there for? Their primary purpose is to support a particular doctrine, a way of thinking. Should we win the Middle East? Yes. Should we always support Israel and never talk? Yes. Glenn Beck is there today. Glenn Beck wants us to realize it is only through saving Israel and protecting it and maintaining a single Israeli state that there will be freedom from tyranny in the Middle East. Well, Glenn, did you ever spend any time in the home of a Palestinian living in Gaza or the West Bank? No, they're heathens. They're not godlike. Well, Glenn, what in your life is godlike? What kind of God do you believe in? You keep using the Old Testament. Who wrote the Old Testament? When was it written? Did God write it? Did he? Then are you going to go by that? Are you going to become a cannibal? Are you going to have slaves? Are you going to bash babies' heads against rocks? Which particular part of this true belief are you not going to actualize? And then does not that make you a hypocrite? And then is not almost all religion based upon a set of beliefs that can be taken on a spectrum from moderate to extremely destructive? It's all an illusion. The trouble is, the people who gain power in our society today must gain power through illusion. In other words, you must create an illusion to get people to believe in it, that you are omnipotent, you are powerful, you have the answer. And once they give you their power by their vote or their money, then you use it as you will. And rarely do people actually look at the consequences of what they've done. I'll just give you an example. How many times have we heard people say that we want to go back? We want to go back in time to when life was better, in the 1930s and 40s and 50s, you hear the Tea Party and the conservatives and the Republicans saying that, and a lot of blue dog Democrats. We want that time. Do you? Is that what you really want? Okay, let's take you back. Let's take you back from the 1930s to the 1950s. And this was a time when you said America was at its best. Its body politic was at its best. Well, we had the New Deal. You could get a very inexpensive 2% loan from the Federal Housing Administration. If you served in the war, you could get a GI Bill to go to college. And look at all the millions of people who were employed through the huge subsidies by the federal government for defense contractors for supporting the armaments factories. And how about all those cities that got enormous amounts of government funds so you could grow the suburbs? And how about all those federal projects that ended up being the interstate highway construction projects? Oh, did we forget the space programs? Government subsidies. And how about all those public schools? The greatest growth in public school education in the United States happened in the 1940s, 50s, and 60s. All that was socialism. How about record union membership? How about the highest tax rates in American history? And also, how about good job benefits, Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid? How about all of this ensured that America had a financial stable base and that we cared about people? Now, that all came because of the Great Depression. And that came because we needed the government to spend more in ways that helped everyone. So if you're a Tea Party member, or you're a Republican today, or conservative, if you're Sarah Palin and you yearn for the time when America was independent, the 1940s and 50s, well, understand something. It was only that kind of progressive big government and what you would call socialist ideology that you now condemn that allowed you to have the quality of life you had growing up then. Oh, that's not what you wanted. You're going to back it back. You're going to walk it back and say, no, that's not what I wanted. I wanted a better time. Ah, you mean you wanted the robber baron time. We want to go back to the mid-1880s when millions of Americans were living in absolute poverty, when children as young as 6 years of age were working 12-hour days and frequently dying of consumption. When there was no Social Security, there was no workman's compensation. If you were injured on the job, too bad. Killed on the job, your family didn't get a nickel. There was no 8-hour work day. There was no 40-hour work week. Yeah. Do you remember the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory fire in 1911? There were no safety laws for workplaces. There was no collective bargaining, no rights, no women's rights, no equal pay. There was only massive endemic political corruption. And everyone was working cooperatively together in that corruption at the highest levels. You had nothing but monopolies and trusts. Laissez-faire capitalism? Oh, yeah. No rules and no regulations. And all that was, is that what you want, Glenn Beck, Sean Hannity? You want to see your child put to work because you couldn't afford to work? And working in a steel mill? Is that what you want? And you're a Christian? Gee whiz, wonder what your Christ would say if he came into your house, Sean, and says, Sean, you support a form of Christianity that's nihilist. You support a form of economics that is punitive and exclusive. Now, what you have, Elizabeth, is you have anything that is done in the name of their capitalism becomes their religion. There are no Christs or gods in their religion. There's only those who are the epitome of greed. And they have embraced globalization. They have embraced the power of international corporations. They love NAFTA and GATT, the World Bank and International Monetary Fund, neo-doctrine, Civil War. They love torture. There's almost a fetish in torture. I'm surprised they don't put it on the curriculum, teaching torture starting in first grade. Torture, enhanced interrogation for better schools and better teaching. They love public-private partnerships because then they can privatize prisons and highways. It's called a cash cow contract. And look at all your homeland security, 10 different companies doing the same identical work. And all this is funded how? taxpayer-funded, all for corporate elites. TARP, all of the bailouts, none of that helped the average person. So the next time the Tea Party began to actually question their priorities, let them do so from a larger perspective. And, oh, why didn't I see an outpouring of contempt for the Supreme Court's 2010 Citizens United ruling, which upheld corporate personhood and exacerbated the widespread corruption of our elected system? If they're supposedly pro-Constitution, well, that Supreme Court decision completely shredded the Constitution. And for all of you Democrats and liberals, please get over yourself. Unfortunately, progressives have been deluded into wishful thinking, image projection, that you can rehabilitate the Democratic Party. No, you can't. You can't. They're going to stay exactly where they've been, because that's where they profit from. So you have to look at all these beliefs from something as more practical and pragmatic as we live today. And if you do that, then we have a future. If you continue to believe in these supercilious notions of Darwin and survival of the species, then that would be like trying to write a letter on an old peck and punch typewriter versus computer. We have to rethink the passage we're in, not relive the passages we've been in. And those Bibles, those are written over 1,000 years by countless people that we will never know, who brought their own prejudices, limitations, beliefs, and illusions of what they had experienced up to that point. And we hold that as sacred? What a mistake. You can be enlightened, you can be inspired, but it's all still an illusion. Hope that answers your question, Elizabeth.
Thank you.
I'm Gary Knoll. Going to go to our break. Please stay with us. Back in a moment. Special offer for you, one that I have not done before, where you're getting maximum benefit. But let's pull back a moment. Why should you want this product? Now, I cannot make claims for what it will do for you, but I'll tell you why I created it, because a lot of people say, Gary, I can't take green stuff and greens and grains and red stuff and berry blasts and muscle and all these other products. Is there some way that you could put the best of these products into one and that I could take each day that would really help me on a lot of levels and cover a lot of my needs. So I went to work on this. First, I wanted it to be chocolate because I wanted to get the cocoa. I wanted to get the polyphenols. I wanted to get the benefits of chocolate. It has a delicious chocolate flavor. In fact, I've been out of stock on this for 4 months because I went back to actually get more chocolate in the chocolate. Then I give you 26 grams of the highest quality protein imaginable. Gluten-free, dairy-free, soy-free, non-genetically engineered. I make this protein by blending the three best proteins I know. Brown rice protein, hemp protein, and pea protein, split pea protein. Then I want to give you those flax seeds for the omega fatty acids. So I give you flaxseed, then maca, M-A-C-A. Of all the different roots from South America, of all the different superfoods, there are two that I decided to use in here because I consider them the best. Maca root powder and acai berry. I then put in both spirulina and chlorella for the chlorophyll. I then put in sunflower powder and canola powder. Then I put in all the teas, green tea, black tea, white tea, spirulina, lipase, protease, cellulase, and then NADH, and something I don't think you'll find anywhere, Lohan Kuo fruit, and then billions of positive non-dairy probiotics. It's high in fiber, 15 grams with a serving. It's a big jar, 5 pounds. I mean, it's humongous, 5 pounds. But I had to make it 5 pounds in order to give you two to three servings of fruits and vegetables in one serving, 26 grams of protein, all those teas, all that spirulina. And you have to have a large serving. So I had to make it 5 pound jar. Now, originally, this cost, what was it, $249. I've done something that I have not done before on this. I'm giving you this today for $99. It's called Super Muscle, plus a $40 DVD, How to Live Forever, my big successful show on PBS that's now being offered on non-commercial radio, free. So just look at the savings. Look what you would normally have to pay from its original price and the DVD, and you're only paying $99. That's a phenomenal savings. Here's the downside. I only have 300 bottles. So, if you want to have this, it's the best price it's ever been, or will be. And people say, why do you only have so many bottles? Because the ingredients are hard to find. And my manufacturer, who's meticulous, will say, okay, I've got all these, but I don't have this, this, and this. So when they get materials in, I use them, and I do all this in small batches for high-quality control. Call 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. Or you can drop by our vitamin closet at 92nd and 2nd, open from noon to 6, Monday through Saturday, or at our main office at 83rd and Broadway, open 7 days a week from noon until 6, or call 877-627-5065. Super Muscle, all in one, for people who want all in one, or as much as you can get in one. And I put as much as you can get, and that's why it's 5 pounds. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. My guest is Thomas Appel. He's a visionary philosopher. I mentioned his background earlier in transpersonal psychology. He is the author of Roadmap to Reality, Consciousness, Worldviews, and the Blossoming of the Human Spirit, which explores various levels of conditioned worldview. And he's with us today. Nice to have you with us today.
Oh, thank you, Gary. I really appreciate the invitation.
Perhaps a good place for us to begin is with exploring a certain definition, which is self-awareness. Now, we claim we are aware of ourselves, but then what does this really mean? And if there were a universal perception of ourselves, then we would assume that there would be uniformity. However, that is far from the case. So self-awareness, something inherent in a human being, and if not, what is the alternative that we're left with? So let's begin there.
Sure. It's kind of a fascinating thing because there's always this debate about how conscious animal species are. You know, are these animals self-aware? And we're sort of constantly running tests on these animals, but we haven't given a similar test to humans to find out, you know, do we pass a test for self-awareness? And the more you start to look into that, the less it appears that that is the case. To give you an example from another culture, I guess, the fascinating story from World War II is that when the foreign troops were in some of these South Pacific islands setting up army bases, they were hauling in all kinds of goods by ship and by airplane, and then they shared some of those with the natives, and then they stayed as long as the war went on, and then took all their stuff and left, which left the native people saw some, you know, canned goods and clothes and all kinds of things that they wanted. And so they tried to basically recreate the white man's magic to make these resources come in. They were literally wanted to see their ship come in, and so they would go and use vines to make radio antennas, and they would pick up the old books, and they didn't know which was right side up or upside down, but they would sit and read those in the office, or build airstrips and make airplanes out of straw and control towers, trying to get the ships or the planes to come in and to bring them goods. And looking that from an outside perspective, it's, you know, seems like really bizarre behavior that they're really not aware of their place or their relationship to the universe, not really aware of cause and effect in the same way that we are. But yet, if somebody were to come in from the outside and look at our own culture, they might also say that, you know, that we're not really self-aware of ourselves. And so, when we look at self-awareness, we can say that there's degrees of self-awareness, that when you look in the mirror and recognize yourself, you know, that's one level, but it's different from, say, being aware of your behaviors or how the universe functions around you.
Okay. Well, without going into great depth, review with us the different stages of cultural historical evolution during the course of human history, and maybe its corresponding mode of thought or worldview that defines it, and if you could please focus on the magical,
okay,
and then
sure,
the mythical, and then the sequential, all right, like the sequential, the birth of an industry and science and pursuit of material wealth, the mythical, the birth of agriculture and the emergence of God and warfare, and the magical, the corresponding to the hunter-gatherer tribal culture. I think we could learn a lot and then touch on the holistic based upon the shared commonality between people in a pursuit for sustainable prosperity, which is something that is emerging, I believe, more today because of our crisis than it has before because of the crisis. Your thoughts, please.
Sure. There's a fascinating correlation between the technologies that are used by a culture to survive and everything that blossoms from that. That, you know, if you are a hunter-gatherer society and you're digging up roots with sticks and hunting game, that it tends to lead to, first of all, a small population size, and that it kind of dictates from there the structure of your government, that they tend to be very egalitarian. egalitarian, that nobody has more power than another, that even the chief, regardless of whether male or female, the chief is going to be out there getting food just like everybody else. And it tends to be connected with this kind of what we call magical thinking that I was describing with the whole with the people in the South Pacific. And so that's one worldview that is very alien to us because it's very different from our own worldview. And an interesting thing happens when you get into agriculture and start plowing fields with livestock and machinery, and you have the bumping along and the plow, which makes it impractical for women to do the plowing because it can cause miscarriages and pregnancy. And so it tends to be the food supply is dominated by men doing most of the work. And the result, and you've probably heard this through Ken Wilber's work or Daniel Quinn or Derek Jensen have all talked about this and how the rise of agriculture brought us hierarchical systems and the exploitation of people and women and children and the environment. And then when we get more into what I call a sequential worldview that's really based on industrial infrastructure, then we have very linear thinking that starts with interchangeable parts and assembly lines. And each of these levels is able to support a bigger population in the first place, and it results in changes in every aspect of society, from the way we raise our children to our politics, how we approach politics and education. So it really changes all of these aspects, and right now we're really transitioning from sort of an industrial infrastructure to more of an informational one, which is again changing all aspects of society.
That's a very good way of summarizing that. Thank you. Today, I believe we witness an excess of mythological thinking. For example, the prevalence of fundamentalistic Christianity, intent on believing the Bible as a non-historical document and strictly divinely revealed, and then reductionist science, which has turned into a kind of scientific religion itself that feels technology can solve all human problems. So would you look at this from your perspective and expand on this concept of what are our views as a dominant world paradigm that's shaping American politics and society today, since most people are sitting at home getting virtually all their reality from the manufactured perceptions over television or the internet or newspapers?
Sure. It's really fascinating to sort of see these transitions in action because, I mean, if you go back as recently as Henry David Thoreau's time in the 1850s, it was still popularly believed in American culture that seeds could spring up magically from the ground, that we still had that magical aspect to our culture, you didn't need a seed for a plant or a tree, that while most things grew from seeds, that if a tree popped up miles from any of others of its kind, that it was magic it had popped up like that. So we're talking about Americans in the very recent past that had a very magical worldview. And then that, of course, was already in transition to a mythical worldview that was actually dominated by a mythical worldview at that time, in seeing that that this is the world of God and the devil and philosophical principles, and at the same time beginning to transition into some of the things that led to the Industrial Revolution. And so the sweeping changes that come through, it's kind of fascinating. If you take a look at one aspect, say the rise of the railroads, when the first railroads came along, nobody had ever really traveled faster than animal speed before. And so they called it the annihilation of space and time to be able to, because it made the land smaller to be able to travel so quickly. And it really changed people's experience and sort of rewired their brains that in the past people would have gone into, say, a small grocery store where all the everything was packed in tight around them, very personal experience, which is very much like the experience of bumping along in a stagecoach and sort of interacting with people in the fields along the way. Well, when you get in a train and you're going faster, you're no longer having that intimate first-person experience. You're looking at the big panorama, looking out there at the distance because the foreground moves by too quickly. And so it started to rewire our brains that now we actually tend to prefer that, that instead of it being about the journey, it's more about the destination. Let's get there quickly. And even our grocery stores have turned into what's effectively railroad tracks with a panoramic view of all these products. So
I like that analogy. Thank you for that. One last quick question because we're running out of time.
Mm-hmm.
Today there's a back-to-the-land tribal consciousness emerging, somewhat associated with New Age thought in some circles that seems to harken back to magical thinking of the hunter-gatherer. And a truly holistic model would incorporate the best of each level of cultural development and want to discard that which is an impediment to growing awareness. Is it true indigenous societies today have certain qualities that would help modern societies immensely, such as respect for nature, but it is rather regressive to think we can all return to that? Your thoughts?
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't actually see it. I see it as a distinction that I go to a lot of primitive skills rendezvous. I do wilderness survival skills and find people that are very conscious of their connection with the earth and trying to live more sustainably. And it's really a different level. It's not quite the same as going back. It's sort of a new tribal consciousness, if you will, kind of a mystical approach to the land. And it's very much arising from the technology that's just showing our connection to the earth in a different way that, hey, when you get down to the genetics of it, we're not that much different from other creatures in this world. And so there is sort of this new tribal consciousness, as you say, that's coming back and that we can use that to live more sustainably and really work past some of these things that are imperiling life on Earth at the present.
Well, thank you very much for coming on and sharing. I look forward to another conversation. This is a fascinating topic, and you've given us a lot of short but in good, incisive understandings of it. All the best to you.
Well, I appreciate the chance to come on the show, Gary. Thank you.
Thomas Appel, E-L-P-E-L, author of Roadmap to Reality.
Show is produced in our New York City studio. The producer is Richard Gale. The engineer is Matt Bogart. All shows are archived by Joe Kemp. The chief archivist is Sharon Pride, and the program director is Jason Taubenfeld.